Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
Time for our Monday morning briefing from Northwestern Medicine, emergency medicine physician at the Central DuPage Hospital, Dr. Jeffrey Bomer, with us this week. Doctor, good morning. Let's talk about something we all experience, especially first thing in the morning, low back pain. A recent study provided some interesting info on this and maybe how to help. What did it say?
Yeah, you know, I love the study. It actually came out of Lancet just this past week. It kind of validates things I tell my patients all the time in the emergency department coming with low back pain, is that I tell them, hey, don't just lay in bed. You got to get up and start walking. And I don't never put them on a walking program. But what this study looked at was people that had acute low back pain, and they would randomize into a couple of different groups. And they put the group that was in the walking group, they put them on a program and got them walking. And up to, with the goal of trying to get up to 30 minutes five times a week. And they found that those patients that were treated with the walking program compared to traditional measures actually did much better. They had much fewer recurrences of low back pain. They actually went much longer without having the second episode of back pain. So they looked, I think it was like 208 days versus 112 days, and they had less healthcare visits by over 40%. So it really kind of proves what we've been doing for a while, I think, in the primary care world and immediate care and emergency medicine world, that we try to get our patients out and walking. And it not only did those patients do better in terms of their back pain, but they actually had secondary gains as well, including better mood, better sleep. So lot to be gained by walking. I think we all know that. We've been hearing of the health benefits about walking regularly, and I think this is just something else that we can do to help our health.
So you're recommending maybe a 30-minute walk five times a week. Do you have to go at a good clip?
Yeah, I think just enough to get the, you know, I don't think you have to get the your target rate, target heart rate up to a certain percentage or certain number, that is. But I think just getting out there and going for a relatively brisk stroll that gets the blood pumping a little bit, doesn't have to be super brisk, just get out there and move. I think that's the key, is really getting out there and moving. And obviously, if you've got health issues that may make walking a little bit more difficult, certainly should talk to your doctor before you get on a program like that. But I think flat surfaces and making sure that you've got good shoes, all those things are important before you get out there. But clearly a lot of benefits from walking.
Any evidence that this might actually help prevent back pain?
They didn't look at that in this study, so that's a great question. I'm sure that's something that may come out of this as well, but I think that I would have to venture that the answer to that would be yes, if you're seeing patients that have acute low back pain and now you're seeing them have a lot fewer episodes of that. I think this, we know exercise and keeping your core healthy are things that you can do to prevent back pain. But I think, obviously staying healthy, keeping your weight at an optimal number, and then obviously other things you can do to besides staying relatively fit and keeping your core fit, as well as making sure you use good technique when you're lifting heavy objects. Posture is really important. So all the things that you can pay attention to. But I think walking by itself probably would, just because it helps keep you healthy. It helps keep your health, probably maintain your weight, and helps. It can certainly help you focus on your core a little bit as well.
I knew we'd have this this problem once we stop walking on all fours. Everybody deals
with
this.
That's right. That's right. It's an evolutionary problem, Bob. Yep.
Let's talk about prescriptions, what we pay for prescriptions. I was reading about PBMs. I don't think I've ever heard of PBMs, pharmacy benefit managers. What do we need to know about this, and what do the PBMs actually do?
Yeah, so we probably all have seen the evidence of this. If we have a private health insurance, Blue Cross, Aetna, one of those, or on Medicare, you've probably received the prescription card that has either CVS, Caremark, Express Scripts, or OptumRx, and we know these as our prescription cards. And so we take those to the pharmacy with the idea that we're going to get a discounted rate because we have health insurance and we're going to get better rates on these. And what these three big companies do, these pharmacy benefit managers, what they do is they actually help either the employer or Medicare help control the cost. They basically help make the decisions about what drugs you can have and how much you're going to pay. And so they they may lead you to, at times, may lead you to generic medications that you may be paying more through this pharmacy benefit manager than you would if you were paying out of pocket. So it's really, they are there to control the cost for the employer or for Medicare purely.
Emergency medicine physician for Northwestern Medicine Central DuPage Hospital, Dr. Jeffrey Bohmer, is with us. Doctor, let's talk about these weight loss drugs and what people need to know about the online sales and social media posts involving phony versions of these drugs.
Yeah, I mean, this is clearly, you know, a byproduct of the supply versus demand issue. These manufacturers, including Eli Lilly, you know, they just can't keep up with the demand. They, you know, they've got two indications. There's four drugs. There's two basic drugs. There's semaglutide, which is the first that came out, and then Eli Lilly followed it up with tirzepatide. And you know what's happening is that a lot of patients are getting these medications off, sort of off label. So if they don't qualify necessarily as being obese, a lot of physicians are finding ways to try to get them those medications, and so we've run out. So of course that creates a black market, and so what you're seeing is another mechanism to get drugs into patients is by compounding them. So semaglutide does have it is compoundable, so you can find pharmacies legitimately that do this. But I guess the World Health Organization is actually getting lots of reports that some of these compounding pharmacies are actually using a counterfeit drug, so they're not actually using the product from the manufacturer. And the same is happening with Eli Lilly. And in fact, with Eli Lilly, I understand it's actually suing some of these med spas and wellness centers that are selling their product in a compounding format. And actually goes further to say that, you know, Eli Lilly doesn't even allow their drug to be compounded. So if you ever see a drug that's a compounded form of tirzepatide, and the generic names of that are Mounjaro or Zepbound, which is their weight loss marketing name. If you see those in a compound, that is not an Eli Lilly drug. That is not there. So I think it's really important that you know who you're getting your medications from and know who your sources are. I think when you get online, it could be anything and anywhere, coming from anywhere. So I think you need to be very careful about what you're doing if you're deciding, you're thinking about ordering one of these medications online.
Have there been any studies yet as to the safety of using one of the good weight loss drugs, or one of the, you know, authentic ones like Ozempic that's so popular? Is it safe for long-term use?
So long-term, we still don't know. I mean, I think that it's... They haven't been out long enough to really say that it's, you know, that it is safe. All indications are that they are safe. They, like any medications, they have some side effects. And one of the ones that's being reported more now is pancreatitis, which we've known about. So there are certainly side effects. Some patients have more side effects than others. But in terms of long-term use, Bob, I think it's too early to say if indeed it is 100% safe. But more to come. But all indications are for now that it seems like it is safe. You know, I think we do hear a lot about how patients feel that they, once they're on the medication, it's especially if you're on it for weight loss, it's difficult to come off because, you know, there's a lot of patients report the rebounding effect once they come off. But so I think we'll see the numbers over the next several months and years and see if there are long term effects. But for now, I think that there's no indication to say that long term that there's any safety concerns.
Let's talk about our diet and a recent study that indicated we're getting better, but it was between 1999 and 2010, the majority of improvement occurred. No advances in nutrition after that? That's hard to believe with all the info we've got now, seemingly on a daily basis, about what to eat and what not to eat. What's going on here?
Yeah, I think what this boils down to in this study is that we're finding out that our major barrier to improving our diets as a whole, I mean, across the country, really is education. I mean, they're able to stratify based on this study. They stratified whose diet improved, whose didn't. And really one of the biggest barriers appears to be education. So I think we see, we see people that don't have access to, don't have access to the healthy foods. They were through these food deserts, if you will. And then there's just many Americans just aren't very well educated on what's really healthy and what's not. And so I think it's really, it's on us as a, the, as as a country, and I think it's important that we really try to do what we can to really improve the education understanding of what is a good diet and what is it. Because I think if you ask the average American, we probably don't really have a sound understanding of what really is healthy and what isn't. So I think that's the biggest barrier there is the education piece.
Yeah, we hear a lot about ultra-processed foods. We know they're bad, and we also hear a lot about soda. But especially at this hour, I bet there's more than one person out there now with an energy drink in hand or a pre-sweetened iced tea, one of those specialty coffee drinks, and those are worse than Coke, aren't they?
Yeah, those are really the amount of carbohydrates, amount of sugar in those drinks is really above what you would get in a typical Coke, and your blood sugar is just going to absolutely spike with those drinks. So it's I'm not saying you can't have those drinks every once in a while. Everything is okay in moderation, I like to say, but really, it's just we need to get back to understanding what's a good diet. So really, we need to have a good number of fruits and vegetables in our diets. We really need to avoid the refined grains like cereals and white bread and crackers and really try to replace those with the fruits, vegetables, nuts, seeds, yogurts, and things of that nature. So, it's that sugary drink in the morning is going to give you a heck of a glucose rise. Yeah.
Hold the whipped cream at least. And I'm staring right now at a chocolate covered scone I got at a farmer's market over the weekend. I guess I can scrape the chocolate off the top of that.
There you go.
Dr. Jeffrey Bohmer, thanks. We'll talk to you soon. Have a good week.
You too.